The Guardian. A couple of weeks ago, I took a flying visit to Copenhagen to give a talk about philosophy and video games for a regular event called Spillbar. The event was fantastic, the hosts were welcoming, and the city was beautiful. But the travel, in and out of the country in less than 24 hours, was brutal. But what if there was a way that I could give talks at events in different countries across the world without actually having to be there? Technology may have a solution. And it's not even that new, but it's getting better all the time. Holograms.
I think I saw one of the music holograms and we thought, well, what if we could do that in our lecture theatre?
Holography dates back to the 1940s, when a Hungarian scientist called Denis Gabor was experimenting with trying to create an electron microscope with a better resolution. Gabor coined the term hologram from the Greek holos, meaning whole, and gramma, meaning message. In the years and decades after his initial experiments, the invention of the laser enabled other scientists to create holograms based on his work. But he probably never predicted that his technology would be used as it is today.
Amy Winehouse is going on tour again next year in hologram form.
I'm Jordan Erica Weber, and this week we're exploring the sometimes controversial world of holograms. From lessons taught by absent academics to celebrities returning to the stage for global tours after their death. This is Chips with Everything.
Danielle.
Yes.
Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Joanna.
Nice.
How are you?
At the end of November, the Imperial College Business School held a demo session for a new project they'd been working on. According to Imperial, they have become the first higher education institution in the world to deliver live lectures via hologram. It sounded like the perfect opportunity for serious investigative journalists who are up for a laugh. So, Danielle, our wonderful producer, you went down to South Kensington to have a look. What did you think? What was it like to see yourself as a hologram?
Well, it was much more unforgiving a process than just looking in a mirror, but I have to admit it was really cool.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
Okay, so the first person I met, and who you're hearing now, was an Imperial student, Kate Watkins, who is currently studying her weekend MBA.
We have to do a marketing presentation in our syndicate group. We're all in groups for our MBA. And my colleague, who was here earlier, isn't going to be here, so we were hoping to use the hologram projection to have him incorporated into our presentation, because he's got to be abroad for the work trip. But unfortunately, just given the scale of the kit, it's quite hard to achieve.
Yeah, it's pretty massive, isn't it?
It is. They are working on it, though. I think it's going to be here permanently by the sounds of things from March. Oh, we're having another go. No.
Wait, what's that sound? It sounds like a dragon or something.
It's not really like a dragon, but you're not far off. It did remind me of something pretty specific.
I don't know if you ever watched Charmed or anything with witches, where they have like potions come up,
the lights appear.
Yeah, the lights come up. It's kind of purple, whites and blues, and it comes in spirals.
There's certainly an element of magic about it, definitely. So there's a, I suppose, mesh screen that the hologram is projected onto. Lots of lights. That's, I suppose, what first struck me was how well lit it is compared to, I suppose, if you were shooting a normal film or photographs. Can you hear us? No, not yet. Oh, he's frozen.
So eventually, Professor Francesco Veloso, Dean of Imperial College Business School, appeared before us in hologram form, and Kate got the chance to ask him a few questions. He was actually in the next room, but they could both see each other. An internet snag meant that the sound on his end wasn't the best, but I did get to witness one of the oddest things I've seen in a while.
Okay, so just on the whole interactive thing, I've been told about shaking hands. Should we try and shake hands?
You can't see this, but that was interesting.
High five. Not many people can say they've high-fived the dean of the business school.
As a hologram.
Yeah, indeed.
It sounds like you had fun with this tech, but does Kate think it'll actually work? It's obviously attention-grabbing, but is it attention-keeping?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's obviously, it is attention-grabbing, but I just think the capacity of it and the opportunity for the field of experts you can get, all of our stuff is online anyway, and it's obviously much more interesting watching it back, someone there in hologram rather than just flat screen video.
Would you like it to get to a point where you can hologram in rather than coming into class?
Yes, definitely.
To better understand what Imperial hopes to achieve with this technology, Danielle spoke to David Lefebvre, who runs the Educational Technology Lab at the Imperial College Business School.
We do a lot of educational technology here, but it's all, you know, very sort of sensible and good and nice. But we decided we wanted something that was just fun. So we looked around. I think I saw one of the music holograms, and we thought, well, what if we could do that in our lecture theatre? So we spoke to about five or six hologram firms, and the first four said, yes, we can do it, and it will cost you £150,000 each time. Of course, that's prohibitive for a university delivering lectures to 100 students at a time. The economics don't add up. And then I contacted Art Media.
Art Media, or A or HT Media, is the company behind the technology itself. I'll get to speak to one of the technologists later on, but David explains that Art presented him with this vision of all of the business schools and universities in the world being connected via hologram.
What if we all had this hologram technology installed? Then we could start sharing lectures. You know, one lecturer from one school could broadcast to seven instantaneously. And this is very attractive for a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, we do have a lot of the leading thinkers in subjects here at Imperial College Business School. We don't have all of them for every subject. But together, you know, if universities start collaborating, we can give our students exposure to a wider range of the world's leading thinkers.
It does sound interesting to aim to provide students with better access to teachers from around the world. But I keep going back to what you asked Kate. So when I was in education, I was terrible at paying attention to the teacher. And surely that must be even more of a problem if the teacher doesn't even have a physical presence in the room.
Yeah, so I found out from David that they actually have a failsafe for this kind of situation.
So we have no plans to let holographic lecturers alone in the lecture theatre. So it's always a team teaching. So the idea is that one of our faculty members will be delivering the lecture physically and the hologram will be participating remotely. So that's the way we plan to run it.
I don't know. I kind of feel like we've been here before. Look at virtual reality. We've heard all sorts of big ideas for how VR could be used to connect people across the world, to allow people to virtually attend events they never could otherwise, and so on and so forth. But that doesn't seem to have taken off in quite the way the industry would have liked. So isn't it possible that holograms might just be a gimmick?
Yeah, I mean, it may well be a naff idea. Lots of technologies emerge and disappear. You know, Google Glass, remember that? But intuitively, I think the hologram one seems to have it's much more accessible. You know, you don't need to put a headset on. When you experience it, it feels very realistic. I mean, I think you've identified the core problem at the moment, which is the kit's extremely bulky. But if it replicates those big old phones we used to have, they got smaller and smaller, and now we just all use them routinely. If hologram kit follows that trajectory, then it will become routine.
You've heard Danielle, Kate and David discuss some of the issues that need ironing out before hologram technology does become an everyday affair. But we wanted to learn more about how it works right now. So Danielle spoke to Rory Elliott of Art Media, who was able to better explain how the technology works, using her as a guinea pig.
Talk me through what we're seeing in this room.
What you have is essentially a very small, compact studio. You've got a camera, you've got nine lights. Bright lights, yeah. So the thing is, we're projecting onto a screen, and the next door is a hologram. And what we really need is every facet of your clothing to come up, because there's quite a lot of bleed through from the projector. So every morsel of your clothing needs to be picked up on your face so it doesn't grey or sort of dissipate.
Now, I was under very strict orders not to wear black to this demo because of this potential colour issue. Stephen, who is a technician in the capture room, explained why black clothes are a no-no.
The projector would see it as a hole in the screen, and you'd see what was behind the screen, and it would just give the game away, because the whole thing is it is an illusion, and if you break the illusion by any small amount, you lose the reality of it. When the illusion works, you're totally immersed in seeing the people and having a conversation with the people. It just needs one technical thing to go to not be 100%, and you lose the illusion.
So what happens when they've captured that image? Say you're one of these lecturers being beamed into a classroom somewhere halfway around the world. What's happening on the other side?
Okay, on the other side we have a sort of theatrical set, for a better word. We've got some set lights, and we've built basically a 3 metre by 4 metre wide screen with a backdrop. So we're lighting up the backdrop, the screen is 3-4 feet in front of it, and we're projecting onto that screen. You can't see that screen as a viewer, so that's how the illusion works. We're projecting from a standard projector with a short throw lens onto that screen.
So it doesn't actually sound that complicated technology-wise. Cumbersome, though. All these lights, cameras and projectors must cost a fortune.
Yeah, so if you remember back, David told us that 4 out of the 5 companies he spoke to quoted him £150,000 per use of the technology, with Art it costs £50,000 to £60,000 to buy the kit. Imperial will then pay an annual license fee and then a small fee on top of that for each hologram they make. David is hoping that as the technology gets better, the cheaper it will get. But for Rory, the possibilities of how this technology can be used extends well beyond a lecture hall.
Yeah, I think if we were saying, listen, we should just have hologram educators, we should have hologram presenters, this and that, so it's never going to work. It is, after all, we've taken this from theatre. You know, it's an illusion, it's a trick, it's meant to be fun. So if we treat it that way and include human element as well. So if you look at, say, the successful hologram concerts, it's not just one guy, a hologram there for 45 minutes. They've got an orchestra, they've got light shows, they've got other dancers, live dancers. There's only one asset. So there's no reason why that shouldn't be the same with whatever market we're talking about, is to add your stamp onto it.
After the break, we'll look closer at one of these hologram concerts as we find out how a hologram will bring singer Amy Winehouse back to the stage, and why it's making some people very uncomfortable.
She hated touring, she hated playing live, much as she loved singing. So there's that too, and also I think there's issues of who gets to control which Amy we see.
We'll be back after this.
Today in Focus is a new Guardian podcast that brings you closer to our journalism by getting behind the news every weekday. You'll join me, Anushka Astana, talking to people at the centre of the big stories impacting our world. We'll use personal perspectives and expert analysis to put you at the heart of what matters. Listen to Today in Focus and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you choose to listen.
Welcome back to Tips with Everything. I'm Jordan Erica Weber. This week, we're looking at hologram technology. Before the break, we stopped by the Imperial College Business School in London to test out their hologram technology, which they hope will provide their students with access to academics around the world. But educators are certainly not the first to make use of this technology.
I'm Laura Barton, and I am a writer and broadcaster.
The entertainment industry has been dazzling audiences with projections of their favourite stars, even the dead ones, for a few years now.
So there's been Tupac Shakur, and there's been Maria Callas and Roy Orbison, Michael Jackson. There's a gathering number.
An exclusive club.
Yes, indeed.
Laura recently wrote an article for The Guardian about the news that Amy Winehouse, who died 7 years ago from accidental alcohol poisoning, will be going on tour in 2019.
I mean, I write a lot about music, so her name came up all the time. She seemed such a sort of... It wasn't quite a Princess Diana dying moment, but it was one of those deeply surprising moments because everyone thought that she was getting better, really.
Amy was known to struggle with alcohol and drug abuse and with mental health issues. Friends and family have been quoted in the past saying she hated the pressure of touring. Laura thinks that this explains some of the criticism for the decision to bring her back as a hologram.
Some people just feel that it's distasteful. It's not so long since she died either, really. In the scheme of things, it still feels quite new. And I think she has become one of those figures that we've sort of picked at. I think people feel that she was really run into the ground and overworked and overtoured when she was very ill during her lifetime, and that maybe she should just be allowed to rest in peace now.
People have also raised questions about how Amy will be portrayed in this show.
So far as I know, it's going to be a very cleaned up version of her where she doesn't drink on stage and she's coherent and she isn't staggering around. And so I think that's not necessarily the Amy that we remember. It's a fine line because I don't think we'd necessarily want to remember her as sort of prim and proper and clean, because half the reason that her songs connected with people was their darkness and their sadness and their sort of heart-wrenched quality.
I never saw Amy Winehouse perform live, but I was interested to know how these holographic concerts will compare and whether they'll include any of the elements that Rory mentioned, like dancers or an orchestra.
So there will be a backing band and they will be live, I believe. So she'll be the only hologram on stage.
In her article about this upcoming tour, Laura wrote that it is important to consider the legal and ethical questions that such virtual images bring.
It gets a bit complicated because you'll have different laws in different countries, and let's say in the United States, where a lot of these stars will be, you'll have different laws in different states even about how long someone has copyright of an image, and then different stars will want that copyright to be protected for a certain time after their death. So Robin Williams didn't want his likeness used at all for 25 years after his death. The estate of Audrey Hepburn has allowed her image to be used in a Galaxy chocolate advert. So each individual case would have to be considered by that person when they're alive, as in the potential for when they're dead, or by the estate after they've passed away.
So you wrote that Amy didn't give her permission for her likeness to be used in this way. Do you think that that is the main reason that people feel uncomfortable about it, or is there something else?
No, I don't think it's necessarily just that. I think there's a lot of focus been on the relationship of Mitch Winehouse, her father, to Amy, and also his involvement with the foundation and people's desire to still make money from Amy. I mean, I always say that I think we're in difficult ground there, because very few of us have been through the kind of experience that Mitch Winehouse has been through, and I would not want to judge a man who is grieving and tell him how to grieve. So I think it's difficult because a lot of us feel ownership over Amy because she was sort of a very important figure to them.
Laura talked to Mitch Winehouse. The proceeds from the tour will go to the Amy Winehouse Foundation, which supports vulnerable young people. But Mitch says he doesn't want people to think it's all about money. He told Laura, quote, "It's about letting people know what made her tick. Here is a chance to show the real Amy through a hologram." Laura also spoke to an expert in virtual reality and its ethics, Catherine Allen, who said that celebrities should only be reproduced in this way if they've consented. But she also suggested that some celebrities might want to make use of hologram technology before they die.
Perhaps it would mean that someone like Amy Winehouse wouldn't be run into the ground. She wouldn't have been playing, you know, that famous show in Belgrade where she, you know, had to be put onto a plane unconscious.
The people at Base Hologram, the company that will produce the Amy Winehouse tour, don't like this idea. CEO Brian Becker told Laura, "Fans are going to want to see them on stage. The best use of the technology is going to be to celebrate icons and create things that have never happened before."
The possibility of combining them, so people like Aretha Franklin and Amy Winehouse doing a duet and those kinds of weird collaborations.
So the last line of your article reads, "However one might feel about the age of hologram tours, their ghoulishness or their grandeur, the great triumph could be that they lead us back to the music." So does that mean that you're in favour at the end of all this research, do you think?
I wouldn't go that far. But what I do think, with a star like Amy Winehouse or Elvis Presley or Michael Jackson, or any of those stars whose life dramas have somehow eclipsed the purity of their talent, I think there's something really wonderful when we listen just to the music. Even writing this article, I hadn't listened to Amy Winehouse for a really long time. I might have heard her in a restaurant or a shop or something, and I hadn't watched a video of her for a really long time. And I went back and did so, and I felt really moved by the simple joy of her singing and how much she could communicate about sadness and love. And it's really nice to just think of her as a musician, so maybe this is a good thing.
I'd like to thank Laura Barton, Kate Watkins, David Lefebvre and Rory Elliott for joining us this week. Special thanks also to Stephen from Art Media. You can find a link to Laura's article and to Art's website on this week's episode description on the Guardian website. With only 2.5 weeks until Christmas, we've been following Santa's whereabouts on the North American Aerospace Defense Command's Santa Tracker. You'll be glad to hear that he's still at the North Pole with all of the elves, making sure everyone's presents are ready on time. If you like to track Santa too, please send us your stories with an email to chipspodcast@theguardian.com. That's all for this week. I'm Jordan Erica Weber. Thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.